just point out a couple of things again. Does anyone not have this little folder here? It was green. Maybe you got a green one. It's the same thing. Okay.
We've got a problem in terms of those folders.
Yeah,
so if you leave them here at the end of the day, share one in a family. We ran out and they had to make more copies. And now the copies are running out and the ink supply is running out.
If you can remember to bring them every day, that would really be helpful. Just a little review again. If you have some questions about yourself and in a work situation, a question or a problem situation, when my work colleague does this, or my boss does this, or my employee does that, I respond by that and then give you a reason because. Or a question or statement about parenting. We're going to deal with parenting on Friday. Work relationships tomorrow, parenting. You can take one of these little sheets, give it to Mary or to me, hopefully today, and then we can try to incorporate those into our classes tomorrow and Friday. Again, books are available. These five books are all available in the library, and you can read them. They are, which side?
Unreserved,
right side, on the right side.
On the other side of the new arrivals.
Okay. And then the all of the sessions, the five of last week and the five of this week, are on tape. And if you'd like to order them, you need to get one of these order blanks and then take them to the bookstore.
If you're curious, the sessions of last week, 3 and 4, I think contain the most information that won't be repeated this week. We went into a lot of detail about stuff that we just don't have time to do this week. So sessions 3 and 4 might be the most important to listen to.
Okay. Anybody need to wave to before going out on the bus today? There they go. Last chance. It's always fun to see how many people gather to say goodbye to folks. It shows, I think, the significance of the relationship that has been established here during people's time here at Holden. I'd like to share with you a verse from the 7th chapter of Paul's letter to the Romans. It is verse 15. I do not understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing that I hate. And the fact of the matter is that that verse gets played out often in our most closest relationships, those with whom we interact every day, those with whom we are most intimate. It always seems to be that we hurt those we love and are hurt by those we love. So keep that passage in mind, because it does reflect the shadow side of our giftedness. The good that we would do is what we don't do. That which we do not want to do is what we do. Let us pray. Good and gracious God, help us to accept this whole person that you have created. Help us to accept our giftedness and the shadow also that is in us. And help us to realize, O Lord, that by your Spirit, you call us to live fully and wholly and to live more and more in our giftedness every day. Help us to do that, and help us to not deny the struggle that is ours of doing that which we don't want to do, but help us to also turn that over to you. Bless us as we study with one another. In Jesus' name, amen. Mary's going to give us a quick review of yesterday, and then we'll move forward on relationships.
Okay.
If you want to look at the backside, first a disclaimer, however, I was reminded of this morning talking to you. And we talked about this a little bit last week, but forgot this week. This Antiograph is not the answer with a capital A. It is not salvation with a capital S. It is simply a tool. It is simply a theory. And it's for us to use as best we can to help us in some kinds of self-understanding and self-knowledge. So even though we may talk with just great passion about it, we recognize that it is simply what it is, a theory, a tool, something you can use if you choose to use it, something that can be helpful. We have found it extremely helpful, both in our spiritual growth, in our marriage, in relating to our kids, in helping our kids understand their marriages, and so on. So we've seen how helpful it can be if people really take it seriously.
It isn't the answer.
David Daniels, who wrote the Yellow Book, is a psychiatrist who teaches at Stanford University, and he has said that if he can get people to really take the Enneagram seriously who are in counseling with him, he can cut their therapy time down by 7/8, which is a lot.
It saves a lot of money.
Yes, and you can just buy a book and do it for free. But of course, we delude ourselves, and we really do need community to help us understand ourselves. It's really easy if you're going through these types and you see a type, oh, that's me, oh, I like it, oh, that really feels good. You're probably wrong, you know, because what's easy is usually not what's true or what's right. So yesterday we talked about each of these types, there's 9 types, and they each tend to reflect a facet of the image of God. We know we're created in God's image, and the theory is that each one of us is designed particularly to reflect one facet of God's self into human society. And that saves us from ever thinking we need to be God by reflecting all facets. It also makes us very much aware of how much we need each other, because the whole of the image of God only comes in community when people are more or less accurately reflecting the image of God that they have been designed to reflect. So that all of that is on the back side of this handout, and you can look that over at your leisure if you weren't here yesterday. What we're going to do now is to leap through what would be a semester course in a university in about 5 minutes. So, are you ready?
Yes.
It's our trust in your brilliance that we think we could do this. Have this side facing you. This is the shape of the Enneagram. The symbol has come down through like hundreds, thousands of years. Nobody really knows. But the theory is that we each have a sort of weight. And the way I like to think about it is, I don't know if any of your children or you when you were small had one of these balls that was weighted on one side, and so you'd push it and it would just flump off in one direction. It would never go straight. Do you remember those? I'm the only one that had one of those?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so when push comes to shove, you flump in a particular place or in a particular direction. And so we are all of this, but we are weighted to one particular point. Now, the reason I put all these wonderful little dots all the way around is to get across the idea that there are infinite number of points in a circle or on a ball, infinite numbers. And so nobody is like anybody else. And everybody is unique. Nobody is a type, nobody's in a box. And one of the things about the Enneagram as a system is that there's so much sort of built-in fluidity. And so I'll just talk about that a little bit now. First of all, I will talk about centers, I think, instead of built-in fluidity. The theory is that twos, we talked about as being the helper people, the caregivers, threes, the successful people, the enterprising people, and fours, the creative people, all have heart energy, that their energy, their primary energy source is in their heart. The theory is that we have three sources of energy in our bodies, our heads, our hearts, and our guts. And they've even done some research that proves that in our intestines and in our internal gut tract, there are neurotransmitters like there are in the brain, that it is in fact an intelligence. And so people in this triad would tend to lead with their heart. And so they would feel, or they would, all that feeling language would come into their vocabulary. So they're heart people, they're feeling people, and at their core, underneath it all, there is a deep anxiety about their image. So they give to the world all kinds of power to determine how they feel about themselves. The twos need other people to need them and need to be seen as caring and giving so that they give to you the power to determine how they feel about themselves. If you need them, they feel good. If you don't need them, they feel crummy. Threes need to be seen as successful, and they give you the power to determine how they feel about themselves. If you think of them as successful, they feel good. If you think of them as a failure, they feel wretched. Fours need to think of themselves as special and unique. And if you think of them that way, if you give them that place, then they feel good about themselves. And if you don't, they feel crummy. And they will find some way to convince you. So that's this type. And if you look at the bottom.
And turn the tape on. Turn it on.
Oh, turn on the tape. Yes. Sorry, tape people. If you look at the bottom of this page, this top stretch is the heart triad across the top. So the twos in their healthiest self have instinct for giving, and then as they kind of go down in health, in emotional health, they become helping, caring, they start needing to be needed, their strings start to get attached to what they give, and finally they become extremely manipulative. And they can be the kind of Jewish mama syndrome, after all I've done for you, kind of thing. Threes, at their best, are very effective. That's what they care about, is doing the work for the sake of the work. As it moves down, they become driven about being seen as successful. They become competitive, status-seeking, and finally very deceptive. If you're not going to see me as successful, I will sort of fake my resume. I will name drop. I will do all kinds of things to make myself be more important than what I really am. And they convince themselves of it. I mean, it's self-deception as much as other deception. Fours, at their healthiest, are these wonderfully creative people. Then as they go down, they can become the great tragic romantics of the world. This intense need to be special. If they're not getting attention for being just flamboyant and articulate, and I'm going to swallow. Okay. Okay, that's fourth.
15 minutes.
Okay. Over here you've got the head center, people that have head energy. They lead with their heads. They want to think. They want to understand. And at the base of all of them is fear. So if you want to just go through and read these on your own, this is the person given the gift of thinking, person given the gift of faithfulness. Underneath the gift of thinking is the sin of avarice. Underneath the gift of faithfulness is the sin of fear or doubt. And underneath the gift of joy is the sin of gluttony. So people kind of go between those two things. And up here, the gut triad. The eights, who are given the gift of power, and underneath that is the sin of lust. So that need to dominate, to excess, is a part of the eight personality. Nine's given the gift of peacemaking, and the sin of sloth. They just become lazy and kind of finally fade into nothing. And ones, who are given the gift of the vision of justice, and underneath all that is a deep, deep anger and resentment. that just comes out in all kinds of ways. Now, what are all these lines for? When people are under stress, it's like we've got this ball and it's weighted to one corner, but there's a little kind of line inside the ball, a direct link to somewhere else. And under stress, if that ball is going really fast, the ball will shake loose and it will slide down to some other point. So a 7 in stress slides over here to 1 and picks up that obsessive, causey, self-righteousness of a 1. A 7 in health has another direct link and slides down here to 5. And becomes very calm, very studious, very drops deeply into something instead of kind of splattering across the top. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So for each of these types, there is a stress point and a security point. And your weight, the weight inside your ball, sometimes does, not always, sometimes you just stay where you are, but it can easily slide down and pick up either the good traits of your security point or the negative traits of your stress point. And then, in addition, all of these little dots show how you can be sort of spread around the continuum. There's no point of stopping here. So that a 7 can go anywhere over here up to this point, picking up 8 traits. And if they get farther than that, then they become an 8 who's picking up 7 traits, you see? Or you could be a 7 going down here picking up 6 traits. Or a 6 going up and picking 7 traits. So that's what's called your wings. And you generally lean toward one side or the other, but often part of the midlife crisis and midlife growth is picking up the energy from the other wing that you have not paid much attention to in the first part of your life. Does that all make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
You said a 7 in health would slide to 5. Can you just say a little bit more in health? What does that mean?
Well, or in security, or in integration. I think people use different words. Okay. But when you're feeling good, when things are going well, when... Yeah, I don't know how else to say it. When you're centered, you know, when you're picking up good energy all the way through, when your body is helping you out, when your kid isn't on drugs, whatever the stressors are, when you're not moving, all kinds of stressors in our lives, when you're sort of free of all of those stressors that come at you.
When is that?
Right now.
Right now. Right here at Golden. You are free of stresses.
I think so.
Oh, yeah. Except you've got a kid here, right?
I have 3.
3 kids here. Oh, bag that idea.
2 teenagers.
Yeah.
I don't understand. You're using this as they go down there in unhealth or they go someplace else?
The way Riso says it is that a 9 will drop down in bad. There's 9 levels in Riso's book of health.
Yeah.
And a 9 can either drop all the way down in nineness.
In nineness.
Or drop, I think it's down to the 5th level of going down, when they could and often do slide down here and pick up 6 stuff.
So it's either...
And they don't become a 6. They just pick up 6-ish behaviors. 5 level 6-ish behaviors.
So it's
so they've got their own curse plus the 6 curse. A 7 has their own curse, this monkey mind, plus the perfectionism of a 1. Now those two things drive you nuts, you know. An 8 has their own curse plus the curse of a 5, which is avarice. So, does that make sense?
Thank you.
Yeah.
But in health, an 8 can pick up the good traits of the 2.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
The 8s become incredibly magnanimous and just the benign dictator, that kind of thing, yeah. Okay, I'm done.
Well, we're really going to talk about this in terms of relationships and whether most of you, I suspect, are married Some of you are living maybe with significant others. And whether it's friendships or whether it's marriage relationships or whether it's with a significant other, I think it's really important to know type. You know, I read in the paper all of these dating services that are available now, you know, and I wondered, I wonder if at some point they would be willing to plug in the Enneagram, because it would really help you in terms of understanding someone else and yourself if you were able to share an Enneagram type. But I suspect that most of the dating services in our country today are really not interested in going quite that deep. They're interested maybe in much more superficial kinds of things. One of the questions that I was asked yesterday, you know, if I'm a two, is it best that I try to find a two? And the answer to that is no. The point of all of this is to find someone who is psychologically mature, whatever type they happen to be, so that you can indeed appreciate one another and grow together. And that really is the, even though there are, on two occasions, there are male twos will most commonly seek female twos. And female fives will most commonly seek male fives. That's the only two types that do that. Otherwise, others have other preferences. And as we go through, I'm going to go through each of these nine types very quickly to show where they are in average health. You know, when we're in good health, it's easy to live with anybody, isn't it? Yeah, hey, we're playful, we're fun, we're having a good time, we're energetic, we've got all of those things, and you know, then it's no problem. It's when we are not in good health, it's when we are not totally secure, that then we begin to take on other different kinds of characteristics, and the shadow of ourself begins to show, and how do we recognize that in our partner, or how does our partner recognize that in us. So I'm going to go around this circle, and then you'll discover maybe a little bit when we get to 6 and 7 why these two people managed to get along. This effervescent 6 and this kind of reclusive, or effervescent 7 and this kind of reclusive 6, and how we managed to deal with this for going on 40 years now, isn't it? 43 years, I think, since we first met. In fact, maybe telling you how we first met can give you an indication of the difference between 7s and 6s. We were at Concordia College, and Mary tells people that the first time she saw me, she knew I was the one, that we were going to be get together, that the journey was going to be great.
Foolish me.
That's right. She's not always perceptive, you see. And we had a great time. It was homecoming, you know, and we met and we decorated the float and we sat on the swings at St. Joseph Catholic Schoolyard until late in the evening, you know. And she may have felt that, you know, and I didn't feel that as a 6. I had questions. I liked her. She was good looking. She was lots of fun. You know, she had lots of energy. I appreciated that. You know. But as a 6, you know, I wasn't ready to say, hey, I know this is the one. No way. Oh no, I've got this piece in me that's always doubting, always wondering, always questioning. Ah. It could have also had something to do with the fact that I had a girlfriend back home. For the most part, you know, that's how a 6 approaches life with those kinds of questions. I once had a couple come to me to get married. And I knew they had shared an apartment in a nearby town for some time. And I said, why do you want to get married? And the guy looked at me with a straight face and said, living together didn't work out. Now think about that. Think about that. Living together didn't work out. And so you want to get married. And I said, how is marriage different from living together? We got into a very interesting conversation. Living together doesn't work out. Marriage sometimes doesn't work out. If we're just living together, whether we've had the knot tied, so to speak, or not, is really not the point of our relationships. Is, are we growing? Are we permitting one another to grow? Are we enabling and helping one another to grow in those relationships? I've always, being a clergy person, I've always resented being an instrument of the state. You know, when church and state really get mixed up, it's in marriage. And all of a sudden, I have to be an instrument of the state. And I've always resented it. Because I think we ought to, well, my personal preference is, I think we ought to do as they do in Europe, where you're going to get married, and you go and you sign on with a justice of the peace, or at the city hall or something, even as you can do in many places here in this country. And then you go to the church to get the blessing of God. I think that's, and I think I'm about the second piece and not the first piece. So whether one is living together or whether a couple is living together or married, that's not my concern right now. But are we growing? In the marriage service, in the prayer, that there is the prayer in which we pray for this couple that they may grow in holy love. But I think we also not only want to grow in holy love, but also want to grow in our appreciation of one another's giftedness. The way God has graced each of our lives. The way God's face, the way God's image is made known in us. And part of growing in our relationship is to be aware of the other person's giftedness and then growing in our appreciation of that giftedness. Not just growing in love. Hopefully that can happen. Through these almost 40 years, I think my appreciation of Mary's giftedness, my openness to that, is what has helped our relationship. And her understanding and her appreciation of my faithfulness. Sometimes we still drive one another crazy, there's no doubt about that, because we both have these shadow things. But learning to appreciate, knowing when I enter into a relationship, it's not only the love that's important, it's the appreciation of your giftedness as a 7 or a 2 or a 5 or whatever it is. And realizing that our life together, in our life together, we have the possibility of enabling that giftedness to grow. And it seems to me that that is a much healthier way to view these kinds of relationships. So what's my best match? Is it a number just like me? Not necessarily at all. It is rather a person who is psychologically mature, one with whom you really want to grow. Because you see, Mary and I have similar values in many ways. But she values as a 7 joy most. And I value as a 6 faithfulness most. And the art of the relationship is growing in the appreciation for what she values most, and her growing in an appreciation of what I value most. And that's really a very healthy way to look at the relationship between one another. We hear a lot of talk about family values and all those kinds of things. I ask couples when they come in to see me, what do you share in common? Well, we have the same values. What are they? Well, we both love family. Well, I haven't found anybody in 40 years who wanted to get married who didn't love family. They all say the same thing, you know. We have the same interests. What is that? Well, we like to bicycle together, on hot days. We like to do ragbri in Iowa. We like to swim together. Okay. What else do you value? Well, we both go to church. Okay, you really value that, do you? How often do you go to church? And there's a great silence, you see, at that point. let's see, when was the last time?
Easter.
Or we have a policy in our church that you can't get married unless you're a member of the church. Because we have people coming through all the time, sizing and look at the place. Hey, this is a nice $2 million backdrop for my wedding. I'd like to be married here. And it happens all the time, you know. And then you ask them, you say, no, we only perform. And we have some people who actually go through all of those classes and everything, you know, because they want the wedding rather than there's some faith thing going on, you know. But, you know, what is it that we value together? And can I, part of my task in this marriage is to learn how to appreciate what she values most in herself, which is the giftedness of joy. And that is a tremendous, yeah.
Twice you mentioned psychological maturity. Where does that fit into the diagrams?
Well, it means that you're not totally self-centered, not totally caught up within yourself, don't have warped kind of thinking about where you are in the world, are not totally lost in terms of that you're so afraid you can't even live. So that you have a healthy appreciation of yourself as a human being. And that's what you look for.
That's what I asked you, though, I think, a healthy appreciation.
Yeah, and that's what that is.
Psychological, what is that?
A healthy appreciation.
Well, you said a lot of things that it wasn't, but you didn't say what it was.
Well, I think it is an appreciation of who I am as a person. It is appreciation of the abilities that I have and that my partner has. It is an appreciation of what we can craft life, how we can craft life together. It is an appreciation of other relationships. They may be familial, they may be friends. It is appreciation of all of those kinds of things. And that's healthy, you know. It's appreciation of my own energies.
But what I asked you, and I'm sorry to perseverate on it, but where does that fit into the diagram?
Well, it fits in all over the place. It fits into the giftedness. When we are healthy, when we are appreciating who we are, whatever our number is, and appreciating these other people too, whatever their number is. It's psychological / spiritual.
If you think of a continuum between the gift that you have been given and the curse that you have been given, that psychological maturity, you never get all the way down here. Psychological maturity would be being more on this end. In this continuum between living out my power as power of beneficence and caring and compassion and living out my power as domination and lust and perversity, you see.
Irrespective of number.
Irrespective of number.
Yeah, I've seen some people describe the same thing, the same continuum as like between mentally healthy and mental illness. You know, you're talking about being mentally healthy with whatever number you fit into.
Yeah, but right. I think people can be mentally unhealthy without being mentally ill
Can't equate them. Is that helpful? I don't know if it is or not. Maybe we can continue the conversation after we're over. What I want to do now is just quickly go through each of the types. And talk about where they are in kind of average health. When they're less than totally healthy, when they're less than secure, and just point out some characteristics of each one. Let's talk first about the ones up here who are anger-based, who get things in the gut, and of course their great gift is justice. And in average health, you will find ones are very orderly persons. They're very self-controlled. They like to have everything that is consistent with the ideals that they have. That's what they like to have in a mate. That's what they like to have in the way they order their home. It's what they like to have in all of their relationships. And their fear, the fear of a one who is in less than total health, is that other people are going to mess this up for me. Somebody's going to mess this up. And I don't want this messed up, okay? That's my great fear if I happen to be a one. And there's no way that I want it this way. So our two friends who were here at Holden last week, a one married to a seven, okay? And that one, you know, is very concerned about justice. So when it comes to things around the home, the seven does all the outside work and the one does the inside work. They have it try to balance it. The seven does the cooking, simply because I think he likes to cook. And maybe the one doesn't like to cook, that might be the reason for that. But there has to be a sense of equity in this. Our daughter is a one, and she's married to a seven, a different case scenario. And boy, it was very important to her that when she and Peter were married, that things were really divided down the middle. We know this you do, this I do, this you do, this I do, and it had to be well ordered. That's a one, okay? That's necessary for a one. Well, the first one in seven I was talking about, you know, when they're going to make the beds, you know, and they're going to wash the sheets and come in and make the beds, you know, and he starts helping her, and she says, forget about it, because she does military corners on the sheets, you know. They got to be square corners, they got to be just right, you know, and if he does it his way, she'll just, when he leaves, she'll undo them, you know, and redo them that way, you know. And so in less than full health, you have some kind of aberrations that begin to show themselves. But the one is well ordered, and the one is very careful about how things are going to be done. They're very conscious about details, okay? And they appreciate your awareness of details. Your remembering a one's name is very important. Especially if you've been going with one another for 6 or 7 years. It's very helpful. That, you know, your remembering of a time that you're having a date, you're gonna meet for coffee at 3 o'clock. 3:05 is really unacceptable to me. 3 o'clock is what you said, and you need to be there and be with that person. So how do you with that kind of a thing? How do you interact with the one? If you are in relationship with one, well, for one thing, you compliment their well-orderedness, whether it be how the house looks, or the fact that the checkbook is balanced, because in a 1-7 relationship, for instance, there's no seven in the world who can balance the checkbook. The one will not let them, and the one will sit there, and if they've got the bank statement and are trying to balance it, and they're 50 cents off, they will sit through the night until they find that 50 cents and get it straightened away, okay? So in that kind of a situation, you know, you compliment them on the fact that they're dependable, that they do things in a well-ordered fashion, but don't expect compliments from ones. Oh, no, don't expect compliments from ones. They're much better at receiving compliments than they are giving them. Because they might see that you don't do things perfectly like they do. So why should I compliment you? So, I mean, that you got some ones here. I think we got a lot of ones in this room. Okay? So, what can you do? When something is wrong, be sensitive with how you register your complaint. Because a one is also very self-critical. They will take that and they will live with it and they will remember it and they won't, you know, they will be devastated by it. So be sensitive with if you're living with one, with how you challenge them on some particular issue. Don't be right out there and just wham them and then turn around and leave. You want to exercise some real sensitivity with them. Look at yourself if you live with a one. Ask yourself, how can I improve? You know? Maybe you're one of these real slobs, you know, you never pick up after yourself. You know? If you set yourself a goal, try to pick up after yourself. Because the one will immediately recognize it. Ah, he's improving. I've lived with this slob for 7 years, and finally he's getting a clue, you know. And they start to respond in a very positive way toward that. If you're wrong, admit it right now. Don't try to hide it. get it out in front, hopefully get it over with, okay? That's what you really need to do. Then you're done with it and you can move on. If you don't admit it, you're never going to be able to move on. You're stuck there for a while. Who knows how long it's going to take. Ones need to be right, so don't get in power struggles with ones. This is something that you never want to do. Because they will outright you in any way that they can, and they're particularly gifted at
that. But the victory is so sweet.
You're wrong. Just love it.
You're nasty.
That's right. You're really nasty. That's right. Well, ones, you know, if you're going to have in a positive relationship with the one, you'll talk about your responsibilities together. That's really a very healthy kind of thing to do. You'll talk about what you're learning and about how you're growing, and you talk about your relationships. You may think, if you're not a one, you may think in grays. Black, or ones think in black and white. That's it with them. There's not much movement here. It's black or white, it's right or wrong. And so that's when you really have to be serious and sensitive in terms of your negotiating with them. And they carry an awful lot of guilt for things that they have done when they weren't perfect. Try to bring some fun to their life. Try to bring a sense of humor. Try to engage them in healthy kinds of things that get them out of their moralistic selves and into having a good time. Ones love gifts, ones love hugs. You might accommodate them. So, a one, ordinarily, one females will choose a nine, most commonly, or will choose a five, next commonly. One males will choose a two, most female two, most commonly, and then threes, fours, and sixes, next. Okay, we're really going slow. Okay, on twos. Okay, if you're, what's that?
Can you run over that again, what the ones will choose?
Yeah, the female ones will most likely choose a nine, are more apt to choose a nine, and then a five.
Okay.
And male ones are more apt to choose a two, and then three, four, and six, in that order. Twos.
All the ones I know have chosen sevens.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Go
figure. Everybody has a bad day.
That was not always.
That's a typical six. It's nine times. A two in average. Remember, these are the caregivers. Two in average health is really gets very possessive. They start to hover over you, you know, until finally gets overbearing. You can't even take it anymore. They become very self-centered. You know,
this is average health.
You know. They really start to get possessive. They start to get possessive of you. Their desire is to be needed. A two needs to be needed, but can't accept that fact. You know, and their fear is that somehow what I'm doing is being taken for granted. So they need your appreciation. They live with the idea when they're in less than good health, with the idea that I don't need you, but you depend on me. Okay? So I'm out there and I'm going to do everything for you, and I need your acknowledgement of that. They're very heavy into relationships, and any sign of rejection devastates them. You rejecting a two's desire to help you can be very devastating to a two. What can you do to help a two? Well, you can encourage a two to really be authentic, to say, you know, I understand you really care, you know. Now, why don't you let your caring just show in that way, and not in just always trying to make this impression of loving me and helping me and giving to me. a two needs to be appreciated, so very much so thank a two when the two is indeed helping you in a positive, good way. And they remember gifts. I mean, they will remember every person's birthday in their life. And they will send them cards. They remember. I don't remember my own birthday. But they're right there. They'll be right there because they remember you. Okay? Well, and they remember you and it's a two-sided thing. One, because they may be indeed very authentically caring for you. Number two is because they need to have you remember that they remember you. Okay. So you have that's kind of a mixed bag. Compliment twos, help them, and help twos learn to accept help. That's the one major thing that twos really need to do. They need to learn to accept the help of somebody else. Okay. Let's look at threes. Threes are these achievers, okay? These are the ones who really can get things done. They are productive people. Our society is a three society. America is a three society. That's the big thing. Produce, 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 produce on every level of our culture. And average health, the three gets very expedient about everything. You know, okay, I'm going to get this done. Doesn't matter how morally upright it may be, how much integrity it has, I will do this thing. A three is very image conscious when he or she is not in good health. And their desire, when they're not in good health, is simply to impress you. That's what they want your recognition, okay, in their lives. And their fear is that somebody's going to see through them. And they're going to lose face. And that's the last thing that a three would ever want for themselves. So what can we do? We can help threes to feel loved not only for what they do but for who they are. Because they get really caught up with work. Their heart is in their work. But you want to affirm their work, but you also want to affirm who they are as persons, with as gifted persons here. You want to acknowledge their achievements. That always feels good to a three. You want to encourage them to give you honest feedback and live a life with them that you can give them honest feedback. I have a staff member who is a three, and she works like crazy. And I think she leaves her door open in the office so that anybody who passes will know that she's working. And she's the best person on my staff. I mean, she gets more stuff done than anybody, you know. And her life is her work. But what is most interesting is her relationship with her husband, which has nothing to do with work. And her husband, Rick, has this ability to affirm her for herself. Outside of that work, outside of the energy she expends that way. He is able to assure her of his love for her as Ruth. Help threes to slow down, because they're way, way too active. You know, they need to, hey, sit back and relax, look at the larger picture once in a while. Otherwise they're do, 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 do. Okay. And encourage them to nurture their inner lives, because they're working like this, so mad, they oftentimes neglect the inner self. Okay, let's look at fours. Oh, well, threes. Threes, the female threes most often will get hooked with a male one, and then a male nine, and then a male five. The male threes will most often get hooked with a female two, then a four, then a six. Okay. The fours are the romantic ones, okay? These are the very unique people in the world. They will tell you that. They will demonstrate that in all different kinds of ways. And when they are in average health, they can become very temperamental. They're very self-absorbed. They're not out there in terms of you at all. They're really turned in upon themselves. And their desire is to be reassured that other people are interested in them. That other people are interested in them. And they fear that life's demands will be such that they're going to have to give up their fantasy life. Because four is dealing with a lot of fantasy. A lot of things that have nothing to do with the real world that's going on. And if you impose too many obligations on a four, the four will really rebel because they're afraid of giving up their own fantasy life. They're always envious. Others have something that I don't. You know, I should have that, but I don't. Others have that. Nothing is simple to a four. Everything is complicated, just like any drama. The goal is depth, not fun. Depth. Let's probe the deepest things. And oftentimes, the deepest things are the saddest things for them. And so that often shows itself in very great moodiness on the part of a four. The fours are very artistic, they are engaged in luxury, they love luxury, they love art, they love culture, they love aesthetics, they love the ideal. But it's not the happiness that those things produce that matters, it's the pursuit of those things. It's going after those things. It's not actually getting them. Fours focus on mostly the negative aspects of life. The negative aspects, you talk to a four, and the four will be about when you're with the four. The four will, or the talk will be about negative things and in relationship to you. But if you go away and the four is talking about you, it'll only be positive.
What?
Only positive. So it's negative when you're with them, you know, and they'll give you the saddest story and you want to get your handkerchief out, you know, and cry together, you know, and this is all bad. And you'll get away from them and everything is wonderful, you know, about you and about what's going on. It's just, you know, you really have to do some mental gymnastics to understand that kind of stuff, you know. Emotion is the key to a four's life. They live with this heart energy, and they want your absolute presence with them, your emotional presence with them. And if you don't give it to them, they will feel much abandoned. They want you to be right in there with them. And if you put them off in any way, you discover that they'll go off someplace and cry. They need you to be right with them. Okay. So you need to show them your love for them is genuine. You need to engaging with them in terms of solutions to problems. Don't offer easy solutions. Fours don't want easy solutions. They want a tough solution. That makes them more unique. You see. Give them something hard to work with. They're much more. They feel much better about that. And then appreciate their creativity. That's one way you can really affirm fours. And acknowledge their moods and be honest with them and tell them how those moods affect you. Because they have to move, hopefully, that's one way to move them from less than positive health to toward that again. Fives, or fours. Fours, female fours will often choose a nine as a first preference, then sixes and sevens. Male fours will choose a two, and then a six, and then a one. It's
two, I think maybe you didn't say that about the twos, who they might choose.
Oh, twos?
So all of that, that red, that...
Yeah, it's in the red book.
Or you might take it by yours book. Maybe you'll just have to look it up, the one you're specifically interested in.
Five is the observer, and the five, when it's in average health, can become very preoccupied with their knowledge-based thing, their learning. They become very detached from those around them. Their desire is to shut out all the intrusions that come in upon them, and their fear is that others are going to somehow attack their little niche in life, and somehow they won't be safe in that point. They really find intimacy in their privacy, okay? They don't need a lot of words. They don't need a lot of personal contact. They really give the impression, I can do very well without you. You know, I can take care of myself. I'll do without you. It's me and my books and my studies and my learning and my knowledge. Okay? The five is very often non-involved. Let them know that you value their wisdom, their knowledge. Let them know that you appreciate that in them. Respect their need for privacy. Speak straightforwardly to a five, and be brief. A five does not want to hear any long story from you or long explanation. Be brief, be to the point, get it over, and the five is very well satisfied, okay? You can be very direct with the five, but just make sure you don't take too long, okay? Get on with it, okay? Don't put a five on the spot, because they need to have time to process all of the knowledge here and get it in the right order so that they can respond to you. Don't put fives on the spot. They don't like that at all. And don't pressure them to be social gadflies. They don't like to socialize. You may like to do it, but boy, that's one of the things that they don't like. Female fives move to male fives as their first choice in a partner. And then sixes and nines next. Male fives move to female twos, and then...
Or is it female twos that move to male fives?
Huh? Well, anyhow, they seem to meet. They seem to be able to find one another. That's right. Yeah. Sixes in average health are defensive and moody, and Mary could talk for hours about me on that one. They're very ambivalent. They're here, but they're there. They're yes and they're no. It took me forever to decide upon this last call. She already had the bags packed and the moving van called, you know, and I'm still trying to make a decision about this thing, you know. Sixes, when they're not in good health, finally get to a point where they have to find that I don't need any more demands put on me. I get tired of demands. That really gets heavy. But if I don't have all those things put on me, then I might lose the support of the community, of the church, of whatever group I value, because they won't think that I'm faithful, so I'm really caught in yes and no. Sixes will question your faithfulness. They'll always be kind of wondering, you know, do you really love me? Do you really care? Can I trust you? They wonder what you think. They're very strong. If it's going to be six and seven against the world, it's going to be six and seven against the world. We can take the six. Will say we can take the world out.
Counterphobic six.
We can take the world out. Doesn't matter. Yeah. Bring on what you want. I'm ready to do that. But they want. We always want reassurance to overcome our doubts and our fears. And we're not particularly good at locating the tension in our intimate lives with our partner. We are the least in touch with our feelings of any group in this thinking triad over here. So assure the six of your commitment. Be open and honest with the six. Encourage them to talk about their fears and help them focus on the best case scenarios, because the six will always give you the worst case scenario. We're very good at that.
Can we take a break here a minute? How many of you people need to be somewhere? Could you take a little extra time so we can get through this? Why did I shut
the door? What goes on? Oh, they don't ring the bell for lunch until 5:02, huh?
Yeah.
I'm sorry we're so far behind. There's so much material to get through here. Okay, sixes, six females will gravitate most commonly to a nine male, and then a six next. And six males will more likely choose a female two, and a female, or then a female four, and then a female one. Look at sevens. Yeah.
Do men just pick twos?
They like to be. We like to be taken care of. You notice how often that number comes up with men.
Absolutely. Women choose sevens.
Absolutely. What?
And how come no women choose sevens?
Because
they won't settle down.
That's why they won't settle down. Yeah, you can't. You never know. You know what's the seven? What? How many things does a seven want to do? How many people does a seven want to deal with? Not going to choose a seven. I mean, that's, you know, it's something innate. Well, let's look at the sevens. When they're healthy, they're marvelously joy-filled. And when they're in average health, they are so hyperactive and they're doing so many things that they wear you out. Okay? It's only happened once or twice in our 40 years. And they're very uninhibited, you know. I mean, they get to be indiscriminate when they're, I mean, they, you know, their language changes and all that kind of stuff. I mean, really, that happens. Like all the boundaries are gone. You know, when they're not healthy. Okay. And their desire is always to stay up. You know, I don't want to get down. I got to be up all the time. So they do everything in their possible in order to keep their spirit going and their spirit up. And their fear is that the environment isn't going to provide them with what they want, or the partner isn't going to provide them with what they want to keep them going. Okay. So, an ideal mate for a seven adores the seven and lets the seven know it. Okay. So, if you want to be, if your mate is a seven and you really want to be an ideal mate, adore her or him and let them know it. Okay? Because they love it. They eat it up. It's great. Hey, this is terrific. You know? I like that. Okay. The sevens can't stay with the negative. So if you're doing the negative thing, it really is a terrible downer for them. They want to be up. But sometimes they need to be brought down in order to deal with some painful things that they're always trying to avoid. Sevens want to be with partners who mirror their own positive self-image. And they have a difficult time with being with a partner who doesn't have a positive self-image. And they'll try to help the partner create that. You know? And that, I mean, that's kind of a healthy thing, too. They're very sensitive to boredom. Oh, my goodness. That's why Mary has to have 15 things going at once. You know, one thing. Terrible. That would be so boring. It'd be impossible. Always need new interests. Sevens probably flow the easiest with other people. In and out, doesn't make too much difference at all. We can have a good time here with you or with you or with you. We'll just have fun. Okay? That's great. That's a seven. How do we live with them? Appreciate them. Appreciate their spontaneity. They're the most spontaneous of all the groups, of all the numbers. Their optimism. Be gentle with criticism. It cuts like a knife. And it devastates them. So if your partner is a seven, be very careful how you call them to task, for instance, okay? Encourage them to do more regular exercise. Yeah, well, at least you nag, that's right. At least I got her to 10 Mile Falls. I haven't gotten any farther than that, okay? So those are some of the things that one can do to help a seven. Sevens
Seven females most commonly gravitate toward nine males, and then threes and fives, and then sixes. So I was the last one. I was the last one.
Choice.
Last choice, you know. And the males gravitate toward
two.
Two!
And there just aren't enough twos to go around.
There are not enough twos
all
in the world.
All the rest of us women have to pretend we're twos all the time.
Twos, and then fours. Twos and then fours, okay? All right. What does that say about males? Huh? Yeah, it says
mother.
That's right. Okay, let's look at eights who have this great gift of power. When they're in average health, they become dominating. They become self-glorifying. Their desire is to convince others of their importance. Their fear is that they might lose control of their environment. They always want to be in control. Eights love partners who are independent. Eights love partners who are strong. Eights love partners who enjoy fighting, who enjoy sex, and they're going to have a great time with this. And, you know, poof, it's a whole power thing with them. They love adventure. They love sex and adventure, especially as ways of making contact. That's the eight. They have a real lust for life. They have a tendency toward excess in all kinds of things, work and play, et cetera. They love to make rules, but they also love to break rules. Break the rules that they haven't made and that they don't agree with. And they're not afraid to do that. They need control over others and fear being controlled by others. They can't stand ambiguity. You got to be straightforward with them. What you need to do in dealing with an eight is meet them with the same kind, a similar kind of intensity, if you possibly can. Let them know. For instance, if your partner is an eight, you have to let the partner know that they hurt you, because sometimes they haven't got a clue. Are just totally oblivious to the fact that they have done it. Be honest and direct with them. Stand up for yourself. You know. And when you're working, trying to work out a solution with an eight or problem, work to find a third way. Because the eight will try to say the solution to the problem is my way. That's the only way the eight will think. And not your way. So you've got to move toward a third way. And that's really helpful to get eights to think that there's other ways to solving these problems than my way. Because that just simply keeps them in control of all of the situation. Ask them to listen to others' points of view, because that is very helpful. And help them feel comfortable about talking about their own vulnerabilities, which they are very reticent to admit. The eights. Females will gravitate toward fives and six males, most commonly, and the eight males will gravitate toward one, twos, and fours, most commonly. Nines, wonderful peacemakers. The average nine, when not in the best of health, gets complacent, becomes disengaged. Then the average nine wants to maintain things just as they are. They don't want anything changed. I'm comfortable here, I'm at peace here, this is good, just the way it is. And the nine's great fear is having to leave the comfortable patterns that have been established. They do not want to leave those, because that will upset them. They will try to merge with you. You know, what you want, they will try as best they can to just work themselves right into that. You need, if you are in a partnership with a nine, need to become an active agent for change. Okay? Because they can get so comfortable in there that nothing's going to happen. And they need to be challenged with change. A nine will repeat what you want to hear, because they want to feel good about you. They don't want to disturb this relationship. Hey, they will fantasize about merging with ideal partners and being swept into a new kind of life in some ideal way. It's also very wonderful for them. They appreciate the kindness shown to them and give them lots of appreciation. They love compliments. They love hugs. Be patient with a nine, because nines, in making decisions, are going to take a long time. They don't come to this easily. And in some ways, it's like sixes who don't come to decisions very easily either. And if you pressure them or nag a nine, that will raise the hair on the back of their neck, and they will finally get mad. And then look up, because they will then rebel in a very strong way. Be a good listener for a nine. They tell stories. And it isn't like the five where, you know, here's the solution to the problem, get it over quick. Nines love to go on and tell stories. If you've got the whole day, a nine would like to spend that day with you, because a nine has stories that will last that day long. It's Garrison Keillor. The story goes on and on and on and on until Lake Wobegon is, you know, finally someplace, I don't know. You know, it's been dismantled and carried off to Disneyland or something like that. Help keep their peaceful, help keep the environment peaceful as possible, but yet working for change. And encourage the nine to set goals and prioritize things in life, because that is an encouragement to their growth and their movement. Now, this is very interesting. In terms of preference for other types, nine females have no preference. They can merge with anybody. So they are most likely to merge with any of those other eight numbers, or including another nine. They have no preference.
They do choose, though.
Huh? They do choose.
They are usually chosen.
That's right. They're usually chosen by others, right. Yeah.
Because they're so nice.
And then nine males. What are nine males looking for? They're looking for a
two.
Amazing. Amazing, the wisdom of this group. You know? The ability to foresee, you know. And then fours are the next choice of the nine males. There are lots of other things we can do, but thank you for being so patient.
Sorry we didn't get to your case examples. We'll try to pick those up tomorrow.
We'll try to pick some of those tomorrow. Okay?
Okay?
Thank you for today.
Yeah.